Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 307. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, James Jones.
Kind of as always, I guess.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
Our beloved editor, Guillaume Veillette.
I like Nintendo.
Get out.
That's a good start. And appearing on the show for the first time, the previews slash reviews editor, soon to be reviews editor of NintendoWorldReport.com, Nate Andrews.
That's right. Fill in space.
Oh, yeah. Nate, welcome to the show. Thank you for sitting in for John this week, and I'm excited to have you on. You've been playing some very interesting games.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about them in a minute. After the break, actually, we're going to have listener mail this week, and we've got some interesting reactions and questions and clarifications from the Wii U launch news that we discussed last week, and a few other questions, too, if we have time to get to them. We'll get to as much as we can. But first is new business, and as our esteemed guest, Nate, I was hoping you could go first. It also happens that you have the most relevant Nintendo game of the week, so...
Well, I think please. That's debatable, but I think it's pretty relevant.
No, I think you do. I mean, it's an actual, you know, we got other Nintendo games, but this one's actually new.
Yeah. So I've been playing a game called Fractured Soul, which is an eShop release that came out earlier this week. And if you've been reading the site since, like, February, we've had a couple different profiles and interviews about this game, which started out on DS, had some publishing problems there, eventually was sort of redone for the 3DS with a newer look, but again, ran into more publishing problems. And so now it ended up on the eShop as a $12 downloadable game.
Yeah, it's an interesting and circuitous route of this game's history. But I guess it's kind of normal stuff that happens at the end of a console's life cycle.
You know? Yeah, it was a really tough situation for Endgame, the developer.
Oh.
So the basic premise of the game is that you're sort of this lone space soldier type guy on an abandoned space station, and you're trying to escape. It's 3D on a 2D plane, so you're kind of moving from left to right and shooting in a pretty standard Mega Man sort of way. But the catch is that each stage is broken up into two realities, each of which occupies one of the 3DS screens.
Oh, that's so original.
I know, right? Yeah, hold on.
It was back in 2004 when they first started making this game.
Yeah, so it, yeah.
Take it easy, guys.
It's been through a couple different stages. So these two realities have different architecture and dangers that aren't mirrored by the other. And so what you have to do is kind of transfer the essence of your character back and forth between these two realities to take on the difficult platforming challenges.
Is it that you can't clear stages unless you flip, or is it just like situations will be easier on one or the other?
No, you have to flip back and forth to get around things.
Oh, okay.
Like, it might start you out in an area that has a closed door, and you might have to flip to the top screen to trigger a switch and get through.
Okay, so there's... You can't just go multiple routes to try to figure out how to get around. It's pretty
no,
much...
No, it's a really set path.
Okay.
And as it gets harder, the spacing that you actually have to, you know, the leeway on each screen gets smaller and smaller, so
right.
You have to be more precise as you go.
So it's very twitchy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely gets that way.
Yeah, you just, like, it's just that depressive button and it's instantaneous?
Yep.
And Nate, I read your review of this and you described it as, like, having being a 2D platformer mixed in with some shooter elements.
Right.
And I just wanted to clarify, do you mean that it's a run and gun kind of game because you're shooting while you're jumping around, like kind of like Contra or something, Mega Man, something like that?
No, it's not quite to the level of Contra. I think Mega Man is probably the best parallel that you could draw because most of the time you're flipping back and forth to avoid things. Every once in a while, you know, there might be an enemy or something that you have to shoot on one screen or the other. And so you do that. Sometimes it's you would do it while you're actually platforming, but it's never something that's, you know, enemies are coming at you every second and you have to shoot them.
I don't suppose you ever played Chronos Twins, did you?
No, I haven't.
I think it was a DS retail game.
In Europe, I think it came out as a retail game, and then it came out as DSiWare and WiiWare over here.
Yeah, so I played Chronos Twins DX on WiiWare, and I liked it. I mean, it's not one of my favorite games ever, but I thought it was pretty well done, and it just sounds like a very, very similar concept.
It does seem... I was trying to think of the game, but yeah, that was it. It does seem...
I had to look it up.
Oh.
It's not the most memorable game or the most memorable title.
It's the title more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me think of Mario
Twins.
It
sounds like almost exactly the same concept, and that game came out like 3 or 4 years ago at least.
Yeah.
So, I like the idea of this. I think this kind of game is cool. I guess it all comes down to the execution. It sounds like you were pretty happy with the level designs and the quality of the platforming.
Yeah, that's definitely the strongest part of the game. I think the controls and the platforming are very, very good. I mentioned this in the review, but any part with shooting is usually a little bit weaker because it kind of immediately detracts from the platforming aspect, because when you have to shoot, you're usually not, you know, flipping back and forth or doing any of the interesting platforming stuff that it has.
I find the price point so far from an impulse purchase, though. It's kind of weird that this doesn't have a demo. Like, you would think...
Well, it would be weird on a better download service, put it that way. It's not weird on the eShop.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, the higher the price point is, the more you kind of need it to convince people, like, hey, this is worth giving a shot to.
Yeah, and I my guess is it will get one someday. It's just, you know, I just say this is Nintendo being Nintendo.
Well, I know Neil downloaded this pretty recently, and he felt that it was maybe a little overpriced, and I guess his main problem was the art.
Yeah.
It sounded like he just did not like the art, the presentation very much.
So there's video on the site, I think, of what it used to look like on the DS when it was purely 2D, you know, all sprite-based. And the way they've kind of stepped it up to 3D is, I guess it could be taken as a little bit garish. I don't really mind it that much, but...
Interesting choice of words.
Yeah.
But when you say 3D, you mean polygons, right? Like the 3D?
Yeah.
There's no 3D effect at all.
No, there's no 3D effect.
Which is amazing.
That makes sense, since you're bouncing back and forth between screens so often.
Right.
In a way, but I mean, I still feel like you could at least pay it a little bit of lip service.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it could be really distracting. And Nate, is it true that the two screens are basically on equal footing? I mean, it's not like one is the primary, one's the secondary, right?
True. I guess I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah, it's one is not given more attention than the other, especially once you get to further stages where you're flipping back and forth just like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, I didn't think about that part.
You know, breaking that concentration on the 3D effect I don't think would work very well.
Yeah. You know, I read the interview, that the most recent interview we did with these guys. We've had a couple, like you said. And I think it sounds really interesting, and I think the story of how it came to market is quite interesting. If harrowing, perhaps, from a, you know, if you're a developer, you read that and go, oh God, what a horror
show. Yeah,
it's kind
of a horror story.
You know, so I'm really happy for these guys that they finally got it finished. They finally got it out there.
Yeah,
people
definitely
can buy it now. I kind of wonder if they're going to be happy with how it does. And, you know, I think, you know, price is so subjective. You know, your opinion of what's too much and what's too little. We go back and forth, and on the download platforms, it's especially difficult to reconcile because there's so much variability, and the ratio of value and quality to price is very hard to map. There's no consistency at all.
Well, I think the bigger difficulty with that is that because Nintendo essentially moved all the DSiWare stuff over, with the prices more or less intact, it's very difficult to define value, because obviously a lot of DSiWare games should be priced cheaper than their eShop counterparts, but because the prices moved more or less unscathed, they aren't.
Well, you know, in the interview, the developer, I forget his name, sorry. But
it's Grant Davies of Endgame.
You know, he was saying that they wanted to price it like closer to $15 because...
Yep.
This was originally a full retail product, and they felt that 15 was like really the minimum that it should be worth,
or the minimum that they could, you know, they felt financially comfortable with, you know, given the effort and the time.
Yeah, maybe so. And I guess Nintendo's sort of ambiguous negotiation process that goes on with Nintendo, but Nintendo ended up pricing it at, I think, $12 instead. Which still ties it for pretty much the most expensive eShop game, except for New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Well, yeah,
which is 40.
And also one of the largest.
Yes.
Sure. Okay, sure.
I mean, the only thing it compares to that's truly, you know, eShopware, we don't even have it yet, is the Harmonite game.
Oh, right. Which is probably going to be 15.
Yeah, probably.
Isn't it a weird price, though? I don't feel like it really makes that much difference in anyone's mind, like, if it's 15 or 12. Like, perhaps 10,
I mean,
you're starting...
I mean, it makes a difference to me. I mean, that's $3. That's, you know, that's not cheap.
Yeah, but I think I tend to automatically think, like, oh, okay, this is more than $10.
Yeah, it's either more than $10 or less than $10. I mean, 15 is not really... a factor on the eShop right now. You know, I of course, the developer of Fractured Soul is going to be biased and say, well, this game's a steal at $15. If it's over $10, there's a certain expectation of what I want out of the presentation, what I want out of the replay value, and a garish, as you put it, Nate, 2D platformer based on a gameplay concept that I've seen before and done fine at less money than this. If the concept was really original, if the artwork was really cool, if there was just something about it that was a little snappier and like a little more exciting, then I might say, yeah, you can charge whatever you want for it. I'm downloading that shit.
$1 billion.
So I think the game kind of is that kind of snappy, really good platforming. I don't think it's being advertised or being seen as that, and that's kind of the problem.
Ah, okay.
You know, without a demo, it's really hard to gauge, and if people don't...
It is, yeah.
Yeah, even with video, people aren't going to know how good that is, or what they're getting for their money.
I mean, that's the problem everything on the eShop faces. I mean...
Sure.
Until Nintendo has a consistent demo policy, which they absolutely have to have in place for the Wii U, there's really no mechanism for knowing, is this game really good, or is it just sort of a passing thing other than reading websites like ours? But that's...
Sure, and the number of media outlets that review this kind of game is extremely limited, you know, so you're going off like one or two data points. It's not like all your friends are downloading and they're all recommending it to you.
I mean, speaking as somebody who, you know, works on a Nintendo news site, it's extremely difficult to review some of these games. I mean, just because there's a lot of content, not all weeks, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I guess my fear is that this is kind of getting lost among all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, like, I think that there is a... often a significant gap in quality between games meant for retail and downloadable games. And so, like, you seem to be getting more for your buck, really, for games like Go Go Coco Polo or, you know, other games like that that were supposed to be retail but then ended up being download. And it's hard to communicate to people, you know, how, like, you're getting so much for your money.
Look, this is a legit... really good game that you want to play. It's worth paying whatever for.
Mainly, Nate, I just want to know, I mean, it sounds like you think it's absolutely worth $12.
Yes, I would pay $12 for this.
Okay, not that you did, but you would.
No,
if
I would,
to.
Yeah.
All right, well then
I
will
too. If given the opportunity, I would encourage other people to check it out as much as you can. If you're a little bit hesitant, you know, read some of the reviews, look at some video, try to get as much information as you can if you're not ready to put down $12 just like that.
No, all I want is your word.
Well, you
That's
have
good
it.
Enough for me. Okay, so Nate, I know you've been playing another game, but James has been playing it too, so I want to hear from James first about FTL. Does this stand for Faster Than Light or For the Lose?
That's an introduction that I was not prepared for, mentally or physically. So, Faster Than Light, it's one of the first Kickstarter games to really get released and out there, and it is a spaceship simulator strategy roguelike, I think.
Yeah,
is what
I think
would call
that's
it.
That's the term that they use.
And you love roguelikes.
Oh, I hate them. They're the worst thing ever. Whoever invented them should be killed. And so what it, in the game is you basically you have a ship and you are tasked with basically getting to the end of this series of warp points at which point you will fight a boss. The idea is that you're being pursued by an enemy fleet the entire time, and all the while you encounter things like pirates and hostile races.
Is there actually a boss at the end?
I've never made it. And he's fucking unbelievable.
All right.
Oh, the whole last stage is just bullshit.
So this is a PC game, right?
Yeah, this is a PC game. PC, Linux, Mac, whatever. You can get it off of Steam. It's basically you look at your ship and you see the rooms inside of it, and you order your crew around and then you shoot other ships until they die. Or more likely, until you die. Basically, it's a lot of time is spent, you know, there's a balance you have to reach between exploring the various areas you're in as you progress, and upgrading your ship and getting new equipment and getting new crew, and the fact that there is a freaking fleet chasing you the entire time. Also, the game has mechanisms like fuel and ammunition that you have to constantly spend money on to keep up or steal from people that you attack. It's a huge, huge amount of space to cover. You get to choose what route you want to take, but you don't always know what's ahead. Usually it's something waiting to kill you. And the game also has things like I equated it to the judges system in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, where like there are certain sectors where things will, like your sensors will be knocked out, so you can't see what's going on inside your own ship unless you have a crew member in it.
Or like solar flares will pop up and like they can destroy your ship, or they can maybe destroy the enemy ship, you don't know.
Or they'll set parts of your ship on fire, so you have to go put them out. Yeah, it's there'll be like meteor showers where you're just getting the crap knocked out of you by meteors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically the entire game is try to develop a ship in the amount of time you have that is capable of dealing with what is the absolute bullshittery that is the very end of the game. And I have yet to even begin to approach that because it's incredibly complicated at the end. So basically, if you screw up building your ship, you're done. And when you end up dying, because you will die, you get started over at the beginning like you've accomplished nothing. Because it's a roguelike, and that means you hate yourself.
So are you having fun with it?
I have fun with it until I die, and then it's like, God, really? Can you give me something? Like, can I accomplish something for my efforts?
So as far as you can tell, there's no persistence from one playthrough to
the
next.
The only thing you can do is, if you achieve a series of relatively difficult steps, you can unlock ships.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've played it for a good number of hours and have only managed to unlock one, because the series of events you have to do, A, require you find a specific point on this huge map without them really telling you where it is, and then B, achieving multiple objectives that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know to go look for them there. So, on top of the fact you're being pursued by a fucking fleet, it's a legitimately difficult task to unlock these things. I even had a guide telling me how to get them and didn't accomplish the task. I mean, the game can do all kinds of just insane bullshittery to you. It's in a lot of ways, it's a bit like a less action-y version of Infinite Space.
Okay, I was thinking of Infinite Space. I wondered if that's the reason you picked this up, James, despite your hatred of the genre.
It is. It's a lot. The ship development system is a lot less sophisticated than Infinite Space, but it's also a lot more obtuse. There's a mechanic where you can board enemy ships, but I still don't quite get how it works, despite having played it for hours.
Yeah, I still haven't reached that.
I mean,
which they can use to cripple you in an instant.
Oh yeah,
it's
fucking debilitating.
Yeah.
But like what I've developed is I developed a basic strategy that gets me to the last section of the level once, or the last level of the game, like one out of four times, and then I immediately get annihilated. But basically, it's you use things like there's lots of different weapon systems. So one of them is like an ion gun, and that disables a system. Whatever system you've targeted disables it. So I'll just keep firing it at their shields, and then I'll fire other guns, or I'll use a probe that's got a gun on it to shoot their weapon systems and just cripple them to death in a very, very slow battle where they can't defend themselves. This will go on for like an hour as I just work my way through it very, very slowly. Oh. And then you get to the end and just get wrecked. So obviously this isn't the right strategy. Like, it works up until the last stage where like the game just goes, yeah, you know what, fuck you. Here it
comes. No matter what you do, you're doing it wrong.
So far. I understand that the other ships you unlock are considerably better than the first one you get. And the first one you can unlock, is the easiest one. You just have to reach a certain point in the game. I think it's like the sixth sector is pretty not great either. But like I said, it's very difficult to unlock them. Besides that, I can't discern that there's any form of your stats or your equipment or your money or anything.
No, everything's pretty base level as far as that goes. It's only like one or the other.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's very difficult. Like, if you don't unlock a ship, you've accomplished nothing.
Well, I'm sure, like any roguelike, it's more about the intrinsic knowledge that you've gained about how the game works.
I've just gained knowledge that the game cheats. I mean, besides that, I haven't learned
it
anything.
It does sound like that.
So we're talking about the boarding stuff. Like your characters that you have on your ship have skills that they develop by working on the ship. So like you may put a person on the shield generator, right. And if he's on the shield generator long enough, he's going to become really good at getting your shields to recharge. Or you'll put somebody on the weapon system, and it'll expedite how fast your weapons can fire. But the problem is, and certain races have certain skills. Like there's one race that actually generates energy, so if it's in a unit, it reduces one energy cost to use it. Mm-hmm. There's some races that are like big and made of rock, so they can just put out fire without being harmed, but they're slow as crap. There's just stuff like that. But one of the skills is actually combat, and for whatever reason, the AI is always really good at it. And I can
if that's not one of your skills, then you're really just gonna die if somebody comes on the ship.
It's basically me fight a little bit, then run to the healing room, run back and fight a little bit, then run to the healing room and just whittle them down, or
as
try to
they
get them,
you know, run after you
or wreck your stuff.
Yeah, they'll chew through your systems.
I did a very minimal amount of research on this before the show because I'm curious about it. It's a spaceship game, so of course I'm curious about it. And it looks very complicated with the menus and the setup and everything.
It is.
Like very much a PC game, but the art style is very low res.
It
very
is.
Much looks like
it
an
is.
Indie
yeah.
game, very homemade looking. And I'm wondering if you guys think this. You know, maybe this is idealistic, but is this something that could show up on the eShop one day? I mean,
that was one of the points that I was going to bring up because, you know, like you said, it's not very, it's pretty simplistic as far as the graphics go. The mechanics are all built around like simple clicks on the HUD.
Right.
You can pause combat anytime. So it seems like it might translate well to like an iPad or, you know, the Wii U or a touchscreen or something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on the 3DS because a lot of the icons are very small. But on the Wii U gamepad, it would probably work fine.
Cool.
It's $9 right now. I think it goes to 10 soon.
Yeah, like, there's a sale right now.
I enjoy it well enough. I just wish that the game had more progression because it does feel like even when I get really deep into the game, all that's waiting for me is a big bucket of pain at the end. So
so.
Yeah,
I think I'm playing it maybe a little bit different than you. I was listening to the Giant Bombcast last night, and Brad Shoemaker kind of made this point that the game is very good, you know, with its short length for constructing like these interesting narratives of what happens to your ship and you know the random things that will happen. So I'm kind of playing not with the hope of reaching or defeating the end boss or something like that, but just to see what the game can do, what I can do, and how everything works together.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about it that way, like I did one time where I put all my money into shields which is my base default strategy, and then put everything else as opposed to putting it into weapons into the engine. So I just kept warping every time I got to a sector. I'd be like, engine power up, get the fuck out!
Like the second episode of Battlestar Galactica.
And I just jumped through a whole sector without firing a shot, which earns an achievement, which is cool. But
yeah, I think that's pretty cool that you can do that.
But yeah, but then when I got to the last sector, boom! Death comes to those who try to warp from this giant death cannon.
Well, you know what? I've been playing my own spaceship game. It's actually Starship Defense, the DSiWare game by Q Games, Dylan Cuthbert.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, I never had a DSi, so this is one of the many DSiWare games that have been recommended over the years that I'm catching up on the 3DS eShop now. And I think this is a pretty good one. I mean, it's like $5 or $6 probably.
Yeah,
it's very, very affordable.
Yep.
Very simple presentation, but nice and clean. It looks like it's the game is almost black and white, except for the enemies.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it's made on graph paper or something.
Yeah, it's like a grid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think because of that, because it's all these very straight black lines on a white background, it's very clean, but very simple. And I think maybe that's the reason it looks so good on the 3DS XL, because you blow that up and you don't really lose anything. There's not that much raster on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks really nice on the XL, even in the kind of blown up mode that's the default, which is what I'm using. And it's a tower defense game, and there are so many tower defense games. I really can't recommend this one over any other. You know, I think most of them are roughly the same quality. I've never played a tower defense game that I thought was dramatically better than some others. I've played some bad ones, but I've never played one that I thought was just superb and just like the best ever example of the genre.
I mean, the only good examples I could think of like that are ones that legitimately try to do something different, like Dark Lord.
Yes, yes.
My Life is Dark Lord. And to me, that one, and I have that on WiiWare, to me, that one is almost too limited in what you do, because you can't really control the path of the monsters, but you also, you're so resource limited that there's the strategies through most of the game are just really, really, really narrow.
No, I mean, more to the point was that the only games I really think of are standouts in the genre are ones that just act differently.
Yeah, and you know, Q Games has made another tower defense game for PlayStation 3 and PSP and Facebook, I guess, called Pixel Junk Monsters. Mm-hmm. And that one stands out because you're controlling this little character. And so you're actually moving this guy around to build your towers. And then when you kill enemies, these pieces of gold fall out and you have to run after them and pick them up or else you don't get any new resources. And that little bit of it, the kind of collecting of resources, is similar to in Starship Defense, because you don't have a character. You're just kind of this hand of God placing guns around on these spaceships.
I already am a hand of God.
Yeah, but when spaceships die, they spit out energy that you need to build more things, and that stuff just kind of explodes on the screen and starts floating downward, and so you do have to take the stylus and pass it over. It's not a big deal, but it does make you feel a little bit more engaged with the game than these tower defense games can sometimes feel. So I think that's a nice touch. The guns that you get are interesting and they have different strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, it's tower defense, except instead of whatever else, instead of throwing rocks at enemies, you're shooting lasers and missiles. And I'm fine with that. I think it's a very fine tower defense game. Nothing super special, but if you like this genre or if you've never tried it before, this seems like a pretty good one to check out. It's very affordable, and it looks awesome even on the XL. I'm sure it looks even better on a smaller screen. So, I've enjoyed it so far. I think it's a pretty good choice.
I'm not really into the genre myself, but I've been trying to get back into Pixel Junk Monsters, and that game is bullshit. I know some
it's
people.
So hard. It
Fuck
is so
your game,
hard.
Man.
It is really, really hard, and I know some people can, you know, get trophies and get perfect runs on levels, and good for you, like you're amazing, but you have to follow really, really specific strategies. I did resort to look at an FAQ, but the guy basically said, oh, like these two towers that you like using, they're like, don't use them because they're terrible. So the whole time I had been trying, you know, the wrong strategy, because apparently some towers are useless.
And that's a failing of the game. I mean, if the towers aren't balanced correctly, I mean, everything should have its own use that makes it worthwhile to be put in the game, or else they should have left it out.
Yeah, and I had been playing with my girlfriend earlier, and we beat several levels without really breaking any sweat. But then I tried going back by myself, and it was nearly impossible. I knocked it back to like the casual difficulty, and I still couldn't finish the level. So, like, the game is really, really unbalanced.
I found that to be the same. And the trick with tower defense is that, you know, if it's too easy, then it feels like you can do almost anything and you're going to pass the level. So that's not really fun. You want to be motivated to try something creative with your strategy. But if it's too hard, and I think, you know, I think Pixel Junk Monsters is definitely a case of this. If it's too hard, then ultimately they narrow down the choices, and they, you know, they take out any kind of margin on the effectiveness of the multiple things that are at your disposal, and it comes down to there's basically one correct way to beat this, and if you don't figure that out, you're not getting past it. And that is so frustrating to the player.
Oh yeah, it's the worst.
Also, you're usually going to die at the last phase. And so, you know, you're not just wasting 5 minutes, you're wasting like 10 minutes doing a level and losing at the last possible second. It's extremely frustrating.
Story of my life. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, I remember when we had our first run of these tower defense games thinking it was kind of old hat. At this point, I just don't understand why they keep getting made.
I think they're easy to make, or they're perceived as being easy to make, even though they're not.
I think they're easy to make a functional tower defense game.
Yes.
To make a good one, I think, is actually quite difficult.
Right.
It's also kind of a known quantity. I mean, when you buy a tower defense game, there's a certain part of
right. You know,
you
get it
already. Yeah.
We don't have to explain to you this is a tower defense roguelike spaceship simulator.
Right. It's just pick up.
I don't have to make a freaking conjunction of terms that just confuses everyone in the room.
So the other game I've been playing this week is Renegade Ops, and I've been playing this on Steam. Mm-hmm. But Renegade Ops started out as a console game. It was on PSN and Xbox Live Arcade, and then I think later came to Steam.
That's made by Avalanche, right?
What Just else Cause, have they done?
Just Cause 2.
Ah,
I think that's what they're known for.
That explains the style a little bit, I think. So Renegade Ops is the best way I can describe it is it's Blast Corps, but with guns. Because you're always controlling this kind of RC car type vehicle, and you're zooming around and you're driving, and every now and then you get to take over a helicopter, which is really fun. And it controls a little bit differently. You're always playing these vehicles, and it feels very much like one of the fast cars from Blast Corps mixed in a little bit with the Backlash, because it has a little bit of the slide when you have on the turbo boost. Mm-hmm. And, it's just the driving itself is really fun. It's all very top down and very, very simple look to it, even though the graphics are very nice.
Is it a twin stick shooter? Are you using one stick to shoot, one to drive?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So you're driving with one stick and shooting with the other one. You can shoot in any direction. And that really is where it sets itself apart from other things, racing games, Blast Corps, Micro Machines, RC Pro-Am, stuff like that. Because you're shooting. So you have to drive and shoot at the same time. And the shooting's really fun. It's very satisfying. I think the enemies get stale pretty early in the game, and they never really add very much to it after that point. But there are some very cool bosses, and a lot of it is just learning how to manage different groupings of enemies and kind of do crowd control, how to take advantage of the different special weapons you can get. There's like a rail gun and a flamethrower and a rocket launcher. And then you have different characters you can choose from, and they have special abilities, and they level up over time. It's really well done. I mean, I beat the whole game in like 4 hours. So it's not much of a commitment. It's very, very arcadey. But I think if you can get a good price on it like I did, super fun. And I have to mention the story because it's hysterically funny and so well done. I mean, the story is told in this kind of comic book style in between missions with this very over-the-top kind of voice acting. And it all comes across as this ridiculous steroid version of G.I. Joe or the A-Team. They make all these hilarious, like, Saturday morning cartoon references and 80s action movie references. Mm-hmm. It's very well done. Legitimately funny. And I always try to promote and appreciate that in video games.
Twin stick shooters are kind of in the same space as tower defense games for me because there's so many of them, and it's really, really hard to get excited about them. And I think I got it for free on PSN Plus, but I haven't fired it up yet. Like I just couldn't be bothered.
Oh, you should. Because
take your free games away.
It's very different from something like Geometry Wars for the simple fact that you're driving a truck. So it feels different. The way you manage your control of what you're doing on the screen, that just the movement around the environment is very different because of that, because it really has physics to it. Mm-hmm. And the style of the game is just fantastic. So I think it's very much worth checking out, Kim.
All right.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So that's enough for me. And now Guy's going to finish up the segment.
I guess I have to. All right.
Yes, you do.
If you would.
So I finished up Touch Detective.
Yes.
I don't really have that much more to say about it, except that I did forget. It's a crazy omission. I forgot to talk about one of the most memorable puzzles that you'll ever have to solve in any game ever. If you've seen screenshots, the game looks very harmless, very, very cute, very, very child friendly.
No, it's not.
No, as I was telling the other guys off record, unfortunately, one of the puzzles involves you having to enter the dream of other people, and so the way you accomplish that is surprisingly, probably pretty accurate to how you would do it in real life. Maybe.
Right.
So you all hook up to the same IV, and then you lay down on beds and.
No, the way that you do it is that you find some mushroom cookies that you hear are, you know, yep. like they have special properties. And
I'm sure they do.
you go see the town's fortune teller, who tells you that in ancient times they used to envelop these mushrooms in scented paper, kind of like incense. And but she says, but now like this paper is really worthless, and you use it to bag your groceries or whatever. So you go buy some groceries, and you put the cookies in them. And you warm them up in a microwave, and then you get a good whiff out of that bag.
She basically huffs them. Yeah. The animation is basically her huffing them.
Yeah.
So you huff microwaved mushroom cookies out of a special paper bag.
Yep. And then your character gets yep. dizzy and enters the world of dreams.
Oh, you know,
so
like you do.
this game is rated everyone 10+.
Wow. Hold on. I've got my copy right here. I think it explicitly mentions drug references.
In an E-rated game. That's impressive.
Wow.
Oh, right. Drugs are bad for 9-year-olds, but once you turn 10, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, like a kid would have to have that joke explained to him, I think, at that age. I mean, even, you know, in my childlike innocence, it took me a while to get it. So,
I got it right away. Like, once the mushroom cookies are involved, I'm like, oh, no.
You know, I guess it's fairly harmless, because even if you were a little kid playing this, what are you going to do, go grab some cookies and microwave them and smell them? Like, it's not going to hurt you. You know, it's not going
to
do anything.
Yeah, I mean, where are you going to find mushroom cookies anyway?
Right.
It's there's a lot of little things like that. That whole particular case is really disturbing. But I mean,
well, I think the one that will probably scar me for life is the giant chicken lady that you inflate.
Yeah.
Yes. I won't say more than that.
Yes.
But apparently, it's a circus act. Anyway, so the game was pretty good. I finished it. Unfortunately, I think that the fourth case is actually the weakest. It kind of brought down my opinion of the game a little bit.
Like without spoilers, which one's the fourth case?
The fourth case is the closed room circus case.
Oh,
and that game, that particular case, unfortunately, is very clumsily made. Like, it seems that it's basically it turns into a find the object game, and you have to touch different things in order, and then find, you know, some person in town to talk to them about it, and then come back and then touch the right stuff, and then talk to some people again. There's no actual puzzle, like it, and it could almost be kind of a Phoenix Wright kind of thing, except that there's no deduction, there's no logic to it. It was very tedious.
Yeah, there's a couple stages that have that, but I think in that stage it's amped up a bit because you're wandering around the circus, just poking things.
Yeah, and there's nothing else to do. Like all you can do is look at this this room where the crime took place.
And what a crime it was!
Yeah, without spoiling it, but yeah. Like so that was the weakest case, I think.
So what I would say, are you interested in playing the second game?
I maybe not right away.
Yeah, the second game I think is actually kind of a little more difficult to find. I actually prefer the second game to the first one. I think the cases are a little bit better written.
Right.
Mackenzie's a slightly better character in those games, but everyone else around her is a much better character. I mean, so she spends most of her time turning to the camera and talking to you about how insane everyone is around her.
Right.
And basically, they just said in the next game, frig it, we're going to make everybody else crazier.
Nice.
And she just, and there's points in the game where she just sort of shakes her head and acknowledges that everyone around her is insane and then indulges them. And that goes way up in the second game.
Oh, I really like that aspect of the game. Yeah. And I think in a part that I cut out, unfortunately, of the last podcast, I theorized that this game was European. It's actually Japanese.
It is.
It's published by Atlus. And, like it's so free of your standard anime tropes and, you know, like, I gotta commend the writers, you know, for doing that kind of job, and also the people who localized it, because I absolutely thought, like, okay, this comes from Germany or something. Except more fun, because I actually don't like German adventure games. But whatever. Like, it kind of, like, Professor Layden, it doesn't really betray its roots, I suppose. You don't have characters just spurting blood out of their noses because they saw a girl or whatever.
No.
All right, so after finishing Touch Detective, I've dug back into Prince of Persia Forgotten Sands for the Wii, which I had started a couple of months ago, actually before PAX, PAX East. Anyway, very, very good game. I am a fan of the very first Prince of Persia game by Ubisoft.
You mean Prince of Persia?
No, I mean...
Sands of Time?
Yeah, Sands of Time.
Okay.
That was the first Ubisoft one.
Are you a fan of the whole trilogy or just that one?
Pretty much just that one. Like, it was the only one that was really, really good. It was charming, you know? It had a certain tone to it that the sequels certainly didn't have, certainly not the second one.
Yeah, definitely, no.
The Godsmack music or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, Jesus.
The third one's pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right, but still had kind of that trying to be edgy kind of thing that didn't really sit well with me, and I still enjoyed it, but not as much as the first one. And I would say that Forgotten Sands, the Wii version, because it's different from the PS3 and 360 version, definitely brings that back. The same kind of tone of, you know, Arabian Nights kind of storytelling.
So is this the same prince that was in Sands of Time, the trilogy?
No. Supposedly, it started out as kind of a direct sequel to the first Sands of Time game. But then they changed it up when the movie came out, even though the story really doesn't have anything to do with the movie.
Okay.
I think it is technically the same character, though.
Well, it's been a while since I started the game, so I don't remember, you know, if he finds the dagger for the first time and... You know, if it's new to him or whatever, so I'm not sure if it's directly a sequel or what, but the gameplay definitely, like the tone, the gameplay comes directly from the first game. The way that the character interacts with his partner, this time it's not Pharah, it's not a human NPC, it's this kind of genie that tags along and that narrates the game for you sometimes, and you know, like there's banter back and forth between the prince and her.
Oh wow, that's quite a bit different than the HD console version.
Well, it's better done. I mean, like
I don't even think the genie's in the HD version.
Oh really?
It's just the whole character, you and the girl.
Interesting. But yeah, they didn't get the original voice actor though. They got some guy who, the only way that I can describe his voice is he's doing Phil Theobald from Player One Podcast, his voice when he's trying to do the smug Obi-Wan Kenobi from the prequel trilogy. Anyway, I might cut that out. But anyway, it's pretty bad, like the kind of lame British accent
awful.
That it really sounds fake.
I mean,
fake.
It's that bad kind of fake, too. It's not like the funny, this is stupid fake. It's like the,
Yeah. So, but the game is really good. It is a very pointer-heavy game, and I think we've established that I'm a fan of pointer, but you move the camera around by pointing at the edges of the screen, and it doesn't always seem to work exactly right.
Shocking.
I think that could have been ironed out a little bit better with a little bit more testing.
Well, I have a funny story about Forgotten Sands, but I played the HD version. And a few months ago, this is like 3 or 4 months ago, I think, Xbox Live was having a sale. So I bought two games from this sale, and they were things that I wouldn't have paid full price for, but I was kind of curious about. So I bought Dark Void for $5.
Nice.
And I also bought Prince of Persia Forgotten Sands. And I thought, oh, I remember, you know, that got pretty good reviews, and I always kind of wanted to play it. So I bought that. I think, again, it was $5. I booted it up, and there's already a save file on it. I was like, what the fuck?
Okay.
It turns out I played through this entire game like 2 years ago and completely forgot about it.
Oh, nice.
That's how memorable it is. So in this case, Forgotten Sands, very apt title, at least for the HD version.
I think part of the problem is that genre, or that franchise has sort of been run, had its run, and The new Prince isn't nearly as interesting as the old Prince. The banter is not as good. The platforming is, I mean, it's not new anymore. I mean, you've seen Assassin's Creed at this point.
The Wii version is like, brings the charm back though. I just playing it, I remember, oh yeah, I like this franchise. What happened? And then I, like, why didn't I play this when it came out? And then I remember, oh yeah, it came out the same week as Super Mario Galaxy 2. So that was a stupid
That'll
move.
Do it.
Yeah. And, a couple of remarks. People say that the Wii, the SD graphics are really, better suited for, you can't really go with a realistic art style. You have to go like the Kirby or Super Mario Galaxy route. But I think this game proves that that's bullshit. This game and Xenoblade, I mean, they go for a more realistic look, but it's still so beautiful. Another observation that I made was that in the first game, I think that Ubisoft Montreal got some flack for the fact that they tried to tell you where to go in a level by showing you this kind of vision that the prince would have, him going through all the different obstacles.
Yeah. 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 It would, like, fly you through everything.
And they've got some criticisms for that, and they've tried to get away from that, but the solution that they found was to put scuff marks where you would normally want to wall run.
Because people have been running all over this wall for years.
Exactly.
It makes no
like
damn
it would
sense.
Take thousands of it would take thousands of people hundreds of years to make those kinds of scuff marks, you know? Like
guys, we have stairs. Come on.
Well, you know, like not only did these people like first they were really really in shape. And second, like, no one thought, like, hey, you know what? Like, this is a really useful, hallway. Maybe we should put a bridge here over the spit. So it's a little bit, you know, well, yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but I'm willing to suspend my disbelief. You know, like, there are video games. And I understand why they did it, but maybe they need to find a better way next time.
Guys, seriously, I'll fix the bridge. Cut it out.
I guess you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, because you can make the next place glow, or you can try to just be suggestive. But if you're trying to build out a realistic architecture for these environments, then there's not a great way to make it clear to the player where you can and can't go. You know, if there's an intended path through it.
Yeah, but they already put glowing balls of floating sand for you to collect. They serve as the coins in a Mario game.
But those don't regenerate, right? So if you went up there, then you fell down and had to do it over again.
Yeah, but come on. Stop treating players like they're completely dumb. I don't know. And make them regenerate. Enough. Like, who cares?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think Mario gets away with not having to deal with this, though, just because the level designs tend to be so abstract that they really don't need to put things in there that aren't useful for platforming, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a unique problem. There aren't many 3D platformers out there, and among those, very few of them try to get away with these realistic environments like Prince of Persia. So it's a tricky design problem. All right, guys. Thanks. That was a great segment. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got your listener mail.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All right, we have Rayman Legends Impressions by Neil. This Wii U exclusive multiplayer 2D platformer uses the Wii U gamepad to influence the environment. Come see what Neil thinks about this upcoming title for the upcoming Wii U.
It's double upcoming. These are all from the Wii U preview event, by the way, that we have tons of impressions from, but we can't even mention them all here.
We also have impressions from Neil on Pikmin Adventure from Nintendo Land. One of the last games in Nintendo Land to be revealed was Pikmin Adventures. In it, players control Pikmin with Wii remotes, and Olimar can troll them using the gamepad. It has levels full of puzzles and Pikmin-style combat.
Very cool. Not sure that it makes up for Pikmin 3 being delayed, but it looks
that's actually why it was delayed. The Pikmin staff was taken off the game to make this.
It does look fun. So we've got impressions of NBA 2K13 by Ariel Ruff. He says, can you ball? You can't ball like 2K13 can ball. NBA 2K series steps onto the Wii U court with stats on your Wii U gamepad. Ballin' stats. But does it come with a free basketball?
No, it doesn't. But I'm proud of that.
You have to dribble the game pass.
All right, and we've also got impressions for Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Also by Ariel Ruff, he says, the worst-kept non-secret of the Wii U has been revealed. Wii U is getting Blops 2. What makes it unique is the couch multiplayer. Two players, one console.
Gross.
And he actually writes about that. I may have neglected the point that he writes about the multiplayer mode, which is a very worthwhile read, because I actually understand it better having read his impressions. It sounds good.
We have features, the best of the Wii. NWR is looking at the best games on Wii with lavish love letters to our favorite Wii games and favorite third-party Wii games, and podcasts where panels of fans speak longingly of their title of choice.
So James has been on one of these. I've been on one. Nate's been on one. Guillaume's been on one.
Is that the tone you were looking for?
No, but it's awesome. My love letter to Xenoblade just went live today, along with the podcast that went with it.
We have an interview with Nintendo of America Director of Public Relations Mark Franklin, who discusses the Wii U, the Miiverse. It's a made-up word that's a combination of me and universe, in case you don't know.
Oh, wow.
And the eShop.
It's actually a neat, informative interview.
Read that and other revelations.
We also have a review of Rising Board 3D. 3DS, obviously, by Neil. It's an endless run on a surfboard, and it's radical, mostly. We have another feature called Licensed Nintendo DS Games That Don't Suck, by Patrick Barnett. It turns out there are good licensed games on the DS. Batman, One Piece, something called Ben 10, and Wizard of Oz. Come see why you can make a good licensed handheld game. We have one more feature called Walt Disney World and Nintendo, A Tale of Revisionist History, by Tyler Olu. New man Tyler scoped out some gaming history on display at Disney World's Pop Century Resort. He spots a pretty insignificant mistake in the chronology of the display and launches into a scathing editorial of their lack of research skills.
That sounds great.
Journalism.
That's man. So James actually had to cherry pick. There's been so much coverage posted in the last week, we couldn't even talk about it all here in this segment. So make sure you don't miss anything. Head over right now to NintendoWorldReport.com and check all of it out. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It's time for listener mail. We've gotten a lot of great emails the past few weeks, and we're going to try to catch up on several today. The email address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And Nate is going to read our first email.
All right. Connell from Australia writes, firstly, I want to get this off my chest. There is indeed a Mario game where all the bosses are good, and that game is Yoshi's Island.
Here, here.
Most likely because the egg-throwing mechanic is central to the entirety of the game.
But that's a Yoshi game.
Anyway, as an Australian Nintendo gamer, I've missed more than a few this generation. A particular sore spot is ExciteBots, as Excite Truck was easily in my personal top 5 Wii games. As such, the temptation to install Homebrew has always been present. However, I am also paranoid and have always been wary of installing anything in case I had to send my console in for repairs. Or, as is the point of this email, I worry it may cause problems when I transfer my precious data to Wii U. Do you think there's a chance that Homebrew on my Wii might in some way interfere with transfer of my precious data from my Wii to Wii U once that transfer tool is available?
Oh, that would be a dickish move.
It would be, but at this point, letter came maybe like a week or two ago. Yeah, 1 or 2 weeks ago, and now we've got 2 months to wait. So is it really that difficult to wait and see if Nintendo allows a transfer?
Right. If you haven't done it yet, just wait. Assuming you're going to get a Wii U around launch.
Yeah. Now, what I would – well, even if you don't, you'll find out anyway. I mean, people – if it does do this, you will hear about it.
I'll talk about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. But what I would say is, you know – I would imagine if you import these games now, it'll take some time for them to get to you anyway. I mean, it took. I was importing games from Europe, and it took 3 weeks. It regularly took 3 weeks every time. But I would also point out that, don't worry, Nintendo missed ExciteBots also, so you're fine.
ExciteBots is well worth your time to import. if that's what you have to do, it is well worth
it. Is it easy to find though? Because it didn't make that many copies.
True. I don't know how rare it is, but it's worth it. It's awesome. It totally. I mean, if you love Excite Truck, you will love Excite Bots. It's definitely worth the effort. I think, you know, I could go either way here, and you know, we don't really know the answer yet, but I think, you know, the concern, I guess, is that whatever the transfer utility that Nintendo provides will be incompatible with your custom firmware. But the custom firmware that you have to run in order to get Homebrew Channel is, by its very nature, virtually indistinguishable from the standard Nintendo thing.
Let's step back for a second, because actually, depending on what type of homebrew you're doing, there may not be any custom firmware, so to speak. It's just an application that sits in the Wii's memory like everything else.
And it doesn't even really – yeah, like it's a channel, right?
Apparently it does leave traces though, because I think recently Nintendo customer service has begun not repairing any Wii's that come their way if Homebrew was ever installed on them.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so the Wii keeps track of everything you run, and everything has a PID, and that's no different for this. I mean, it has a name, so it can save that name off. And if they didn't give a name, I mean, if they did what DSiWare homebrew cards used to do, when they would pretend to be Danny Phantom Spirit Detective. but I mean, Nintendo knew.
A name that shall live in infamy.
Nintendo knew. My DSi had to use one of those cards, because that same card, if you plug it into the 3DS, it goes nope, and it calls it exactly what it is. It says something like a flash card, but it let me move my stuff over. So I mean, I don't think it'll block you. Honestly,
yeah, but when was that though? Because I think that Nintendo has really taken a harder stance in the recent months.
Maybe, but I honestly don't think they're going to want to deal with a bunch of phone calls about it either.
Yeah, they're not going to be malicious about it. I mean, they're trying to get these things off the market. They're not trying to – and the fact is, very few people use the Homebrew Channel for piracy. And, you know, of course, if you've downloaded pirated games and tried to play them on your Wii, those aren't going to transfer over to the new system. But the things that you have actually paid for have a license file that sits on your system, and all the transfer is doing is moving those license files. Yeah. So those should not be affected, you know, unless they specifically look for these PIDs or these traces that are left on your system just to be vindictive about it. Then I don't see why the transfer system is going to do it. I mean, my homebrew shit lives on a pink SD card that I paid like $8 for at Best Buy. I just won't that won't be in the system when I do the transfer. And if I have to, I'll delete the homebrew channel off the desktop. And if I have to, I'll go download the latest Wii firmware and just have it write over whatever's on there now. So I find it very, very unlikely that this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, I would say the odds are very, very, very small. And on top of that, it's just not worth their time, because it's not. You don't use the Homebrew Channel to play WiiWare games. If you're pirating games using the Homebrew Channel, you're using a hard drive loader, and you've got downloaded ROMs, or downloaded discs, essentially, ISOs, of Wii games, which obviously won't be moved to the Wii U anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think Nintendo would waste their time doing it. It doesn't affect them economically anyway, regardless, for this transaction.
They gain nothing by doing this.
In fact, they're probably happy to do it, because it gets your Wii – it probably means your homebrewed Wii goes off the market. It effectively is no longer being used.
Right.
And you know, you have to wonder also, like, is it such a loss to not be able to transfer games to the Wii U? Because back when I made a commitment, like, back when we didn't know that the Wii U was a thing, we knew that the Wii didn't have an account system, we all had to ask ourselves, okay, before I buy any downloadable game on this thing, am I prepared to keep the Wii, the hardware, around for as long as I want to play those games? Because there was really no promise that we were going to be able to transfer them to anything.
Right.
And, well, you know, so, and I think you could make the same argument with all three of the systems. I mean, And the 360 has an account, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if some
sure, some but like even more so in the case of the Wii, I think.
Yes. The argument's much stronger for Wii because it's a tiny system, it's very easy to store,
yep.
and it uses most of the same accessories and hookups that Wii U is going to use. So if you need to keep your Wii underneath the entertainment center and pull it out every now and then to play Virtual Console, it should be very quick to set
the
up.
The only downside is you probably want to keep one Wii remote just tuned to the Wii. Because otherwise you'd be like trying to turn on your Wii and just keep turning on the Wii U and like, damn it. Damn it, again!
I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, like, you know, like you have to ask yourself, am I prepared to keep my Wii around even though I have a Wii U? And if you don't plan on trading it in...
You're not going to get anything for selling it.
Yeah.
Say that.
No, they're going to be worth it. Yeah. I mean, there's a billion of them on the market and they're going to be instantly devalued when the Wii U comes out.
Right. Yep.
Devalued more than they already are. Mine will probably go on the shelf next to the GameCube. Actually, the GameCube might get moved back down because I'll lose GameCube compatibility.
Hey, James, would you read the next email, please?
I guess I could, if that's what we want me to do. Brian in Anaheim writes, I'm disappointed, but not particularly shocked, at the Wii U price tag. In my opinion, $350 for the deluxe package is $50, if not $100, too expensive. The Wii U gamepad doesn't impress me, and I only paid $300 for a PS3 years ago. So a $350 strikes me as an insult to my intelligence. Needless to say, there's no chance I'll get a Wii U on November 18th, and I don't believe many people will either. I foresee a price drop and a Wii U ambassador program in the near future. Even more distressing is NWR's report that Wii Virtual Console titles will be handled as emulated Wii software. I can only assume we'll be out of luck when Wii's backwards compatibility is inevitably dropped when the Wii U successor comes along. The news today really couldn't have been worse. Wow! Negative Nancy, come on!
Yeah. Hey, you know, we get all sides, all perspectives on this show. I don't think any of us are well, I don't want to speak for Nate, but the three of us certainly are not as negative as Ryan and
Anaheim. We actually touched on pretty much every one of these topics last week. We talked about the price, you know. I don't think it's fair to compare the PS3's price to the Wii U's price, because the Wii U is a new piece of hardware, even though it's not technologically groundbreaking. It is more powerful than the PS3. It has a new manufacturing structure to get in place. Nintendo hasn't
That controller costs something to make.
I was working through that. Yeah, they had to set up new manufacturing capacity. They've got a new marketing campaign. It's new hardware, and it's got a freaking tablet controller that comes with it. You know what the PS3 has to come with it? It doesn't even have an HDMI cable.
Nope.
And, you know, like, it's all well and good to compare the Wii U's price with what you paid for the PS3 a couple of years ago, but guess what? Like, you're still paying $300 for a PS3 today. It hasn't really gone down in price. In fact, I think that Sony unveiled a new slim PS3. That looks kind of shittier than before, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, isn't there a PS3 model that is still $350 or something like that?
I'm sure there is.
There might be a bundle that's $350.
But essentially, like, this new model that they've unveiled does not go down in price. In fact, in a way, it's kind of a price hike because they get rid of some of the lower priced options.
It's a price drop for Sony.
Right.
It costs them less to make it and they make more profit on it.
Right.
I think there was a Sony statement today. It might have been a TGS, but they were explaining why they were keeping the PS3 at $300. And Chris Kohler tweeted it, and I think it was something like that they didn't want to confuse people who are already, you know, bombarded by all these price drops and different packages or something like that.
Yeah, he was saving consumers
from those awful price drops.
Right, from the confusion of the marketplace.
I mean, let's be fair. There is, in fact... There's a $300 bundle and a $300 model and a $350 model right now. I mean, yeah, congratulations. That's what you get. I mean, it's not like it's a big, huge price. I mean, yes, it's more money than I expected it to be. It is. I expect it to be cheaper than that. But I'm not totally ass bent out of shape about it. You know, I think what we talked about last time is pretty salient here, in that we said that Nintendo probably looked at what they built it and they went and surveyed what they had built and said, oh, crap. And then they felt like, all right, well, we have to price this thing higher than we want to.
Yeah.
And really, I don't think that $350 is too much to ask for a new console, especially when you consider the fact that these older HD consoles really still are expensive. I don't think that Nintendo is really being completely absurd here.
It is unprecedented. $350 is the most expensive I mean, even $300 is more expensive than Nintendo has ever sold a console for at launch.
Sure, yes. But yeah, like while we're on the topic of $300, like why not get that instead? If the Wii U gamepad doesn't impress you, then perhaps Nintendo Land doesn't impress you. So just buy the console with a cheaper price tag.
I would like it to be. I would like to be cheaper. Everybody wants it to be cheaper, but I mean, yeah. It's. I can see wanting to wait after the 3DS. I mean, we're not trying to go all circle the wagons on Ryan here. I mean, I can see looking at the price and going, there's going to be a price drop. But I can tell you right now that it's not going to be as easy to find a Wii U as it was to find a 3DS on launch day.
No.
I mean, you can look at what happened when things opened up for reservations, and I got screwed out of reserving one, which is awesome.
3DS launched in March.
Yeah, I mean, it did. It's going to launch in Christmas time, which is when it should launch. It's going to have a much better software lineup. It's going to actually be a complete fucking piece of hardware, unlike the 3DS when it launched. And it's going to actually have, you know, like an eShop.
Oh. Yep.
It's going to be a more pushed. I mean, the 3DS didn't get the kind of press push it really needed, or the media push, and the Wii U is going to get it. Because Nintendo is going to make the effort. They've already made more effort on this stuff like they did on the 3DS. They're pushing it. It's much easier to show the Wii U on TV than to show a 3DS. I think.
Oh, that's a good point.
I think the Wii U is going to be more successful than the 3DS in a lot of ways. And I think, when I sat there and said, no, I'm not going to reserve one. I'm not going to reserve one. I don't need to get one at launch. The thing I was fighting was the fact that I haven't bought a new console in 6 years. You know, like, there's this. It's time to buy a new console. And I think I don't think I'm the only person
who feels
that way.
The moon is high.
I think people in general are at least gamers in general are at that point where they're like, you know, this console cycle's gone on a long time.
Yep.
I mean, we laughed when Sony said they'd get their 10-year console out of the PS3, but they got pretty damn close. I mean,
they're well on the way.
I mean, like, we thought that was ridiculous. There's no way it'll get even close to that. But even if they put out one next year, it got pretty damn close. It got, like, NES level close.
But beyond thinking that the Wii U's price is not that bad, I have to say, like, if you think it's too much, and if you're not impressed by the games, and if you're not impressed by the tech, and you think that a wait-and-see approach is best, I support this.
If you think the wait and see approach is best, then guess what? For you, it is.
It'll make it easier for me to get one.
I was never an early adopter until the 3DS, and I kind of got, you know, a bit in the ass for it. But I absolutely understand a wait and see approach. There's nothing really, like, if you think it's better to wait for the games that you actually want to come out, and you want to, you know, like, you would enjoy a price drop before getting the console, go for it. That is absolutely the sensible solution.
Right. I mean, for you, that becomes the correct answer.
You know, I think the first reaction from a lot of people, and for some it was a joke, for some people it was serious, but a lot of people are like, oh, well, here we're getting set up for another ambassador program. I got to tell you, it's not happening.
No.
It's just absolutely not happening. These consoles, the launch shipment, I'm not making any long-term prediction about the success of the system.
we're not going to get a million of them coming out of you.
No, but I'm just saying the launch systems will sell out, and they will sell out quickly. That's a fact.
And they'll sell out through Christmas easily.
And it's got a lot to do with the fact that this is coming out in Christmas, you know, in the Christmas season. So they're going to do completely fine for at least the first 3 or 4 months, and they're going to sell more than they did 3DS in that price range. And the reason the ambassador program happened is because Nintendo slashed the price by $80 friggin' six months after the system came out. And I feel very strongly that Wii U is not getting any kind of price drop for at least the first 12 months.
So,
and even then, it'll probably be $50. That's not worthy of any kind of, like, mea culpa ambassador program.
For the benefit of Ryan, because I did mention this last week, go back to my prediction of Nintendo kills the value pack and just demotes the black console and starts making white ones of the same sort of build.
Yeah.
To coincide with the launch of whoever decides to pull the trigger first, Microsoft or Sony, and slashes it down to $300 or $299.99. And that will by then they'll have worked out supply chain issues and they'll have decreased their manufacturing costs, so they'll still make money on it.
Yep. That'll happen. So wait a year. If you're not convinced, wait a year.
And then you'll be able to walk right in while you watch people line up to buy whatever Microsoft's next system is. You go, you guys should wait a year.
You can enjoy Wii U vicariously through this podcast.
There we go. Assuming we get one, unlike when we offer people the chance to enjoy Wii vicariously through this podcast.
Some of us try on occasion, at least. So the next email is from Brooke. I just pre-ordered my Wii U on Friday, but I got the basic $300 unit. Was this the wrong move?
Oh.
I'm interested in Nintendo Land, but to be honest, Mario U and other launch titles just seem more appealing as a day one purchase to me. If I had a lot of money floating around, I would certainly have made the upgrade, but I can't help but feel like I made an error by not getting the deluxe model. Also, it should be noted I have external hard drives, so the storage is not relevant to me.
So there's two questions here. One, are you going to buy games digitally online? And two, are you going to buy Nintendo Land at full price? If you get $10 off Nintendo Land, you're not going to buy digital games online. It makes no difference.
Pretty much. And if you prefer a white console, then hey.
If you are going to buy games online, then regularly, like a lot of them, then yeah, you made the wrong choice.
But if you're already very value conscious and price conscious and price sensitive, then you might be the kind of person who's more likely to try to buy things secondhand anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And in that case, you're going to buy them on a disc. And the whole, you know, deluxe service or whatever the hell they're calling it, is irrelevant to you. So,
well, except for whatever eShop games are.
Well, yeah, maybe not irrelevant, but worth much less than
relevant,
if you're
right.
buying $60 retail games through the eShop.
You'll
then
make
getting
up that
10%
difference.
Back is a pretty significant reward.
It's $6 a game. I mean, it will take you 9 games to make it up.
Yeah,
it just really depends on what you want. I would say, you know, I think a lot of people are going to end up with the white model because it'll be what they can get their hands on. And I maybe
on Black Friday they're all white.
Oh, I guarantee you that.
that's the irony. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
there won't be any deluxe sets left 4 days after launch.
No,
trust me.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's cool that you can do this, that you have the choice, and I think based on what Johnny said. The white one probably isn't a bad call. And Nintendo Land is not going to drop in price, just as an FYI, so just wait till you can get it used. That game will be $59.99 for, I don't know, 3 years.
But a week later, you can get it at your local GameStop for $56.99.
Right.
So,
you'll have already lost out on not getting the deluxe set, but that's fine.
I really recommend going for the game that you want and paying for the cheaper price for the console, you know, if that's really like the only way that you're going to get the game that you really want. That's what I did with my Super NES. I bought it really, really, really late, and it was a Donkey Kong Country bundle with two controllers and the game, of course. The hardware was the same as, you know, the plain Super NES sold with no games, but I still went with the single controller SNES. And decided to spend the cash that I wasn't spending on Donkey Kong Country on Super Metroid. And to this day, I'm absolutely convinced I made the right choice.
Yeah.
Me too. So Guillaume has the next email.
RW writes, I just bought a deluxe Wii U from GameStop for a couple of reasons. Black Ops 2 with motion controls. Take that, Mr. Metz.
It's Dr. Metz to you, RW.
And because it didn't require a horrendous bundle. And while I'd have preferred a white console, the free game stands in an SD card, it was rather more cost efficient. But I'm wondering, do you guys think they'll put the seemingly cruddy Nintendo Land packed in the SD card? I'd find that to be a waste of precious space. Sure, I could also hook up an external hard drive, but I'd rather do that as a last resort. What do you think?
So, Nintendo Land, I don't think is cruddy.
Sure. Well, do we think that it's going to be a disc, or do we think that it's going to be on the SD card? I don't even know if the storage is an SD card. I'm pretty sure it's internal flash memory, which is different, right?
Right. It's not. It's not an SD card. It is hard memory. You can't take it out. There is an SD card slot, and that's good. That's what you want. You want. If you're going to put in an SD card of your own, you want that to be in addition to the 32 gigs or the 8 gigs that are already in there.
Actually, I just Googled the answer, and it has been revealed that it's going to be on a disc. It's not going to be a digital copy.
Okay. Well, hopefully it has a real box, unlike Wii Sports did.
Yeah, let's hope.
And I'll tell you the reason. I think it was I was under the impression that they might do a download code to try to get you on the eShop, but maybe if you're already buying the deluxe set, they assume that you are cool with eShop in the first place. But the reason they're not going to pre-install it on the system memory is not only for this very concern, because they don't want the 5 or 8 gigs or however big the file is for Nintendo Land to take up some of your hard-paid, expensive internal memory, but also it takes too long. It screws up the manufacturing process for these systems to flash that software onto the internal memory as part of the process of making the system. It's just not time efficient to do that. It's much easier to print it on a disk and just throw the disk in the box. So that's why. That's the main reason why. It's just cheaper and easier for them to do that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Jeez.
Well, I had never thought about it, but yeah.
You have an opinion. Thank you. I would say we're not, I mean, I would say guaranteed we're not getting an SD card. We just aren't. I mean, there's no reason for them to give us one. I mean, they've put storage space in the system. I mean, and hard drives are dirt cheap, and there's plenty of white or black rectangular hard drives you could get that looks like a baby Wii U. You could sit right next to it.
Or just put it behind there where you can't even see it.
Yeah, but I like to imagine my Wii's actually grown like a small clone of itself.
Spawned another Wii, yeah.
It's got a little clone of itself following it around.
Yeah, so I think you're fine.
So with that horrible imagery in mind, let's continue to the next email.
Yeah, I think if you and here's the interesting thing. I mean, with the Wii, if you recall, Wii Sports had virtually no resale value because everybody had Wii Sports, at least in North America and Europe. And but that's not the case with Nintendo Land. Some people get it included and some people don't. So if you buy the deluxe set and you get a copy of Nintendo Land and it turns out that you don't like it or you just don't want it, I think you'll be able to get a pretty decent resale value for it towards something else. So that's a good option for you as well. All right, so Nate has the next email.
Tom in Rochester writes, "So now that we've heard that the Wii U will go into Wii mode when playing a Wii game, much like the GameCube mode on the Wii, what does that mean for playing Wii games online via the Wii U? I never considered this while playing GameCube games on my Wii because it wasn't really..."
Because it didn't matter!
"Because it wasn't really an option. Do you think you'll be able to go online with, for example, Mario Kart Wii? Another example would be Madden. Right now, when I boot up Madden 12 on my Wii, it checks the EA servers for roster updates. Do you think this kind of feature will be disabled? Can you think of any other games this may or may not impact?"
Well, if it happens like it does on the DS, what happens when you play DS games on the 3DS is that the DS Wi-Fi, 3DS Wi-Fi features are disabled, and you can play online with the DS. Like, right, yeah. You won't be able to Street Pass just in case that the DS game has an online component, you know, or might have Bark mode or something. And so the hardware will prioritize that. So I think that what will probably happen with a Wii U is that you won't be able to use the Miiverse while playing Wii games.
Right.
But you'll still be able to play Wii games online.
Yeah. Sure. Well, here's the thing about the way Wii handles online games is, and this goes right down to the very fact that every Wii game has its own friend code that's unique to that game. Is that the online service is basically on the disc. It's basically handled on a per game basis. So I don't think it really matters what system it's in. Now, the one interesting twist on that is you will probably get a new friend code, because the friend code that the game generates is a combination of some unique ID for your copy of the game and the MAC address of the system. So if you take your Mario Kart disc to a friend's house and put it in there, they're going to get a different friend code than you had on your home system. And the same will probably happen when you take it to your new Wii U system. But I still think it'll work. You'll just have to send out a new Mario Kart friend code to everybody you want to play with.
But is there a way that perhaps with Club Nintendo and with the transfer? No, but seriously, with the transfer, because I'm pretty sure that I didn't get a new friend code for my DS games when I transferred them to the, like when I transferred whatever it is I transferred between the DSi and the 3DS.
Have you tried playing any online DS games?
It's been a while
since you transferred.
I don't remember.
Probably not.
It wouldn't work. I know this because when I went from the original DS to the XL, I got new front codes.
Yeah.
Ah, damn it. Okay.
Yeah, I got new. It's different on. It's different going from one 3DS to another because that is on the system. But there's only a single friend code. But yeah, for these older systems, if you play it, the old DS games actually gave you that warning. If you take this game card and put it in a different Nintendo DS system, you will get a different friend code.
Right.
Because the way they pair it. So that's all. But I think it'll still work on the Wii U.
Why could buy a used DS game and not suddenly get inundated with people requesting your friend to play with you from other previous owners?
Right. Mm. Yeah, I think they did it partly for privacy.
But that was the DS though. Like it had the, I guess that Nintendo was worried that someone else, like if you sold your game, someone else might get your info. But that's not the case with Wii discs though. There's nothing being recorded on them.
But the Wii online system and the matchmaking service is based directly on the DS service. Remember, it launched only 1 year later. So Mario Kart DS came out in 2005, and Wii launched in 2006, and the first Wii online game was Pokemon Battle Revolution, which was end of 2006. So they use almost the same architecture, because there just wasn't much time in between those services launching for Nintendo to really refine it. So they work the same way, even though the way it's done probably is more logical for DS portable games than it is for a console.
Yep.
Right.
But I think it'll work. I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but I can't think of any reason why it won't work.
I would guess it would.
Which I think, you know, Mario Kart, Monster Hunter, there's a few Wii games that you can play online that people really care about. So I think it's in Nintendo's interest to ensure that it does
work. Monster Hunter won't work. They want to make sure you buy the new one. I will say that...
But yeah, like I really think like that the Miiverse won't work while you're in the Wii mode, and probably you won't be able to browse the web. And I think it was announced that you can when playing Wii U. It's really Wii U specific online features that will turn off, basically.
Right.
Right. Right.
If it's anything like the 3DS.
Including the gamepad. And that's one thing I'm curious about is I wonder if there's a fairly easy, robust way for Nintendo to at least enable the gamepad to work as a classic controller, even if the screen is turned off in Wii mode. Mm-hmm. I really wonder about that. Is there a way for them to trick the system in Wii mode into thinking that the gamepad is just another classic controller? Because that might be useful for some people if you don't already own a bunch of legacy controllers, but you want to play a Wii game on the system. It'd be nice to be able to play it on the gamepad. So James has the final email today.
Pat writes, "Hello, everyone. First time writer, but I've been listening to the Glorious podcast since 2006.
Wow.
I'm a high school teacher at a Virginia school, and since it's beginning of the school year, I give my students an interest questionnaire to try to get to know them a little bit better. Admittedly, the question I always get curious feedback on is, quote, what is your favorite video game? The students are aged 15 to 17, and I think you'll find their responses interesting. Some of their responses are typical, some of them I could have never guessed. Either way, I think this would make for some interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy my little polling experiment." So, do you want me to read the first few?
Yeah.
Okay. Call of Duty series was 27 people. The Mario Kart series was 11. Galaxy 2 was 6. Sims 3 was 6. Madden 6. Mario 3D Land was 5. And we get to Just Dance, FIFA, Halo, Smash Brothers. And then we get off into threes, tiny numbers of peoples.
And we've got students who try to be special and list Xenoblade or Portal 2 or...
Well, Xenoblade might legitimately be a correct answer, but nobody in their right mind is actually thinking that their favorite game ever is Plants vs. Zombies.
It might just be their favorite game right now.
Yeah. Or Final Fantasy X.
You know, there's some young people who hold Final Fantasy X in a special place in their hearts. Some people grew up with the double-digit Final Fantasies, believe it or not.
I want to know what NBA Jam is doing, like, way up there above League of Legends and Minecraft.
Well, you know that the three people who voted for it play together.
There you go.
Probably.
Well,
they're all the same class. They're friends.
I want to know what sick... All right, first off, if these polls aren't anonymous, whoever gets who has Dark Souls, do not give him a bad grade because he enjoys pain. Uh-huh. And he will be thinking about that later. So give him just good grades. Deny him any sort of stimulation.
Probably the same for DayZ. But there's Zelda Link to the Past. Now imagine that, someone who's between 15 and 17 years old and their favorite game is Link to the Past. That warms my heart.
Mega Man X is also on there.
Yeah.
Mega Man.
That's great.
Mega Man X, I mean.
You know, this is
excitement.
Pat, thank you for sending this. This is really fascinating to me to look at this. And I think it says a lot about, you know, the diversity of interests in people and just how many games are played by people who are this age nowadays. And what I found really interesting is there are so few quote unquote casual games, you know?
Yep.
I mean, yeah, some people play The Sims. That's fine. I'm sure they're all, you know, those
but
are all
know,
girls.
You know, but I mean, what we classify as casual games now, The Sims isn't it. I mean,
Sims is pretty fucking complicated. I can't play The Sims.
It used to be what we classified as a casual game, but it isn't anymore. The Sims is there's real complexity in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's monotonous to me, but it's not super simple. I'm kind of surprised by Link to the Past is a great example because the people who would have filled out the survey weren't alive when it came out.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're not born yet.
It's really weird also to me that Mario Galaxy 2 has 6 people because it's not really, like, that game came out, what, 2-3 years ago now?
Yeah, but I think people who really love that game still really love that game.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, same thing with Mario 3D Land being so high.
Yeah, but that one is more recent. I think that, yeah, you can't expect more people to answer that, like, the last game that they played, basically, in a poll like this.
Also, sure. I know he is at a Virginia school because I can see the sheer number of students he has.
Boom. Yeah.
Nailed it.
They might have, like, a rotating thing.
I can make that joke. I'm a product of the Virginia school system.
Yes, that's funny. No, I'm guessing that Pat, we don't know if Pat is male or female, but I'm guessing that Pat has some kind of rotating schedule.
Yeah, I know. I just want to make the joke.
They teach 2 or 3 different classrooms full of students. That's why there's so many responses.
Or they teach like 6 1-hour classes a day.
You know, I remember when we first got this email, I was looking through it and I was surprised that I didn't see any Angry Birds. I didn't see any Farmville.
No, like, you know, like Words with Friends or anything
you
like
don't-
that.
Right. Yeah, you don't even see Guitar Hero or Rock Band.
I think that's kind of faded from.
I think Words with Friends, I think people filling out the survey may not even think of it as a video game.
No, probably not.
That's interesting.
I wonder, and it may even be the same with Angry Birds. They may not think of them as video games. When they hear the word video game, that may not be what pops into their head.
I think Angry Birds would be more so, but.
I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they just think of that as Angry Birds as Angry Birds.
Sure. But you know what, though? I think most of the people who answered this survey probably have played those games, and probably a lot of them like those games or spend a lot of time with them. But my point is, I don't think Angry Birds is anybody's favorite game. I don't think Farmville, I think it's something that you play, you kill time with it, whatever. But the sheer ubiquity of these games does not necessarily mean that people love them to death.
No, definitely
but,
not.
But, I mean, people do love Angry Birds to death, though. It's a $1 billion... industry just selling Angry Birds shit. I mean,
people like the characters. I don't know that. Again, I mean, I don't know anyone over 10 years old who says Angry Birds is their favorite game. You might like it, but it's not your favorite.
The only reason I can think of they don't show up at all with the sheer number of people asking.
Nobody was honest enough to embarrass themselves by putting it on there.
It could be that, but I really do think, to a certain extent at least, people who play Angry Birds a decent amount because it's something to do may not think of it as a video game. They just think of it as a thing.
Yeah,
it's a thing on their phone. It's a thing. It's an app on my phone.
Could be.
I find myself kind of wondering about the other questions that he asked. Like, are there any people who answered, like, Ghostbusters is my favorite movie? Or, you know, Back to the Future? Like, all these ancient movies that came out before I was born. 1985, people were alive? What?
We should say that Pat's personal choice at the end of this list, Chrono Trigger, also my favorite game. Props. High five.
Nice. Good teacher.
Yeah. I hope you will teach a class on Chrono Trigger to all of these young people and educate. It sounds like some of them would be very receptive to it. You know what? If you can appreciate Link to the Past, you're probably in the right mindset to give Chrono Trigger a shot, and you should. So this was really cool. I really enjoyed this because I don't talk to 15 to 17-year-olds very often, so I don't know what the hell is going on with them. In general, I'm kind of just impressed by Pat's students' taste in games. There's a lot of awesome games on here. So and not very many ones that I would consider shitty. Actually, none of these I would consider shitty, quite frankly. So I found this like very encouraging and very interesting. So thanks for sending it in. That's going to wrap up this show and the email segment. As always, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we hope you will. There's also a link in the show notes. You can send them that way. And there also is a link in the show notes to the forum thread for Retroactive, where people are talking about Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. This is a game you might already have on your 3DS if you're an ambassador. And it's very, very interesting game. I tell you, it's something special to see a forum thread on a Kirby game where about half the posts are people complaining that it's too hard or they're not sure what to do. That tells you a lot about how unusual this game
is. Yeah, it's Kirby and the Confusing Mirror. I mean,
I'm not too far into it yet, but I'm really liking it so far. So go play it, people.
It's probably my favorite Kirby game. I'll say
that's like saying it's my favorite punch in the face.
Not true. That's not true. I like Kirby. So we are playing it, and we are going to be talking about it soon. I hope that you are at least started on it. If you're having trouble in the beginning, two things. I put some tips in the forum thread, so look in the top post there. There's some things that might help you kind of figure out what the hell's going on early in the game. And as someone in the thread pointed out, there's also a digital manual for the Ambassador version. So if you're playing it on your 3DS, when you click on the tile but haven't opened the software yet, there's a thing at the bottom and you have two choices, either open or manual. If you click on that manual, it also has some kind of basic information that explains what's going on. So you might want to do that as well if you're having a little bit of trouble. But I know there's a kind of a learning curve and it's a little obtuse at the beginning, but the game is very, very interesting once you open it up and figure out what's going on. So it's worth your time to do so. So we'll be talking about that very soon. Hope you will join us. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you very much, Nate, for being on this episode.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Did a very nice job, sir, and hopefully we will hear from you again. So for that, we're going to call it a day, a good night. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. I don't know. Like, ruins have never really looked so good. That was terrible. Box quote.
Is a box quote on another... some games, by the way.
So, Guillaume has the next email.
All right. RW writes, I just bought a deluxe Wii U from... okay. No, it's not the same email. Sorry.
It's Rua. All
right.
It
so
is RW.
Our...
Yeah,
but I just, like, two Wii U... Anyway. RW writes, I just bought a deluxe Wii U from GameStop for a couple of reasons. Black Ops 2 with motion controls. Take that, Mr. Metz.
It's and... Dr. Metz to you, RW.
And because... Sorry.
Go ahead. Yes.
And because it didn't require a... And because it didn't require a horrendous bundle. And while I have preferred a white console, the free game, stands, and an SD card, made it rather... Wait. And while I'd have preferred a white console, the free game stands and an SD card, it was rather more cost efficient. But I'm wondering, do you guys think they'll put the seemingly cruddy Nintendo Land packed in three? I can't read this. I'm sorry. I'm tired. But I'm wondering, do you guys think they'll put the seemingly cruddy Nintendo Land packed in the 32 gigabytes SD card? I'd find that to be a waste of precious space. Sure, I could also hook up an external hard drive, but I'd rather do that as a last resort. What do you think? I should have read that email before reading it.
I don't even know what just happened.
And but that's not the case with Nintendo Land. Some people get it included, Uh-oh. And some people don't. So
Johnny
if
has
you
fallen.
Buy the deluxe set and you get a copy of Nintendo Land, huh. And it turns out that you don't like it or
Beware.
You just don't want it. I think you'll be able to get a pretty.
Do you think he knows, or do you think he's still talking right now?
Oh, he's still talking. His mouth's so, just gashing for you going. As well. Lips, yeah. Lips are flapping, no ears listening. Bucks,
but it's going to make it easy to... I hope he doesn't realize it until he's done, and then it's very easy to edit, because he's already... Yeah, he's still recording.
Oh, presumably. Skype. You rat
Keep
bastard.
On recording, Mets.